everyone to our first speaker presentation. Kara Pike is the Director of Climate Access. She developed this network in her role as the founder and director of the Resource Innovation Group's Social Capital Project. She was formerly the Vice President of Communications for the leading nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice. Kara was a founding board member of the Global Footprint Network. She is an advisory board member of David Suzuki's Stonehouse Standing Circle, and she serves on the boards of Resource Media and the Hollyhock Educational Foundation. She has a Master's of Science in Environmental Communications from California State University Fullerton and a Bachelor of Arts in Film and Communications and Environmental Science from McGill University. So welcome, Kara, and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. I'm really looking forward to it. And as was mentioned, I direct the Social Capital Project at the Resource Innovation Group. Some of you may be familiar with our research. We also do training and consulting, largely with nonprofits and government agencies working on environmental and climate communications. And most recently, we launched climateaccess.org, which is a network for all of us aiming to build public support for climate policy and behavior change. So today, I'm looking forward to talking to you about some of the trends from research and the field on adaptation communications, and spend a fair amount of the time on tips for how to frame the conversation and move people into supporting policy. The work that some of the ideas I'll be sharing with you today come from a body of work that we're just engaged in right now. We started, though, back in 2007, tracking both polls as well as academic articles related to adaptation communication. Some of them you'll see there on the screen. So I'll be pulling from these resources to share some ideas, as well as what we're seeing from the Climate Access Network and a study we just did on 671 climate communication efforts in the U.S. So just a few of the fields that we're touching on, which I think is actually really important to mention, because stressing climate as an interdisciplinary effort, and in the social sciences, that's no different. So we look across a number of different fields to gain insights. So let me just talk about a few of the trends that we're seeing. And obviously, you're seeing some of these yourself, so I'll just be reinforcing what you might already be experiencing. But since we started tracking back in 2007, the big shift is that adaptation has gone from being a side issue, if not a publicly contested issue around whether it was appropriate to pursue adaptation for concern that it might detract attention from mitigation. But that argument is largely over. And the other big shift is that back when we started looking at the trends 2007, 2008, we saw that climate adaptation was largely an issue of what was happening in other countries, particularly poor countries and to vulnerable populations within those countries. But it's probably no surprise, given the number of storms we've experienced over the past 5 years, that the issue is starting to come home. Another interesting note on the research side is that the research field is filling out as well. So when we first started looking at this, there was virtually nothing done on climate adaptation in particular, but that's starting to change, which is a good sign. Another big trend that you can see from the research and practice is the mitigation-adaptation intersection. As I just mentioned, it used to be debated whether you pursue one versus the other, but now it's really quite clear to many that mitigation alone is just not going to be adequate. There's still more that could be done to really integrate adaptation and mitigation. In some situations, they're seen as substitute for one another versus complementary strategies. The other thing that is tracked in a number of research studies at this point is that when you start with talking with decision makers or stakeholders or the public about climate impacts, what's actually happening on a local level in their community, it can build to interest in mitigation over time, because when you start to explore what some of the solutions might be, mitigation starts looking pretty good, particularly in light of a 2 degree temperature shift. Another trend really driving this shift is obviously we have seen more extreme weather events in the U.S. There's been more coverage on that, and the polling shows that Americans are starting to connect the dots between storms and climate change. There's a couple of different things in effect here, which I think are quite interesting to point out. The first is that for those who are already somewhat engaged in the climate conversation at either end of the poll, either very alarmed or motivated to dismiss the conversation, these extreme weather events provide motivated reasoning. So that's why you're going to get some people who are alarmed saying, see, I showed you, but if it's a really intense snowstorm, those who are dismissive are also looking for those clues as well to say, how can this be global warming? I think there's actually something more important going on now, though, and it really impacts the Americans who are more in the middle on this issue. And that's the sense that there is experiential learning going on with storm events, but also it's really important to point out with just shifts in the growing season. So it doesn't necessarily have to be something directly experienced or at a catastrophic level for that experiential learning. And it's really starting to wake up some of the Americans who perhaps were concerned about climate before, but not really sure what it meant for them. It's starting to shift that a bit. I think one of the challenges that we've seen in light of events like Hurricane Sandy is the tendency to be focusing in the short term and reacting to the storm. It's much more difficult to move into a conversation about why and how we should be rebuilding or preparing to avoid these challenges in the future. Nonetheless, lots of opportunity to leverage those events if it's done properly. And one of the key things there is, of course, to never exaggerate the role of any one storm as evidence of global warming, but rather to turn to some of the trends. Uncertainty is a really big issue. I know this is a big deal in planning, but it's also actually very important when it comes to perception and public perception of the issue. Part of what needs to happen, which you see in risk communication situations, is that you recognize that people have their own level of uncertainty as to how something like climate disruption will impact their lives, what it means for them, and what they should do about it. And so you really have to start with recognizing that uncertainty and making sure to not use it as a reason for inaction, which has largely been the case, but shifting more to an insurance type mode where it's simply prudent and wise to try and be prepared. So related to that is there is growing evidence that using that type of a preparation frame can work quite well in engaging the public. One of the benefits of that type of a frame is that you don't have to start with climate. There are so many different ways to start the conversation. For those who maybe aren't willing to talk directly, you can talk about preparing for storm events, preparing for more droughts. We've got to prepare for these changes to our growing seasons that are impacting our local farmers. But I want to make the point, I think it's extremely important to take the time to eventually link to climate, because eventually we do need to get into some of the tougher issues related to that. I also just wanted to make reference to what some of the terms are saying around vulnerability and resilience, that obviously there's disproportionate impacts that you have to be very aware of and thinking about equity in your outreach. And so one quick point on that is, well, resiliency might sound good to one community, to another it can sound like an excuse for inaction or denial or the expectation that some of the patterns of the past will continue. So really need to make sure that there's a sensitivity to different stakeholder needs. But really there's a lot of traction around protecting local resources, which you can come back to and look at this slide later to see some of the stats, but a lot of opportunities to connect there. So let me just wrap now with mentioning a few recommendations. The first is that you do need to be cautious when you're conveying climate impacts to avoid long lists of overwhelming, scary issues, to avoid impacts always being projected far out into the future, to make sure you track back to current trends. Very important. So the point there is to focus on direct local impacts and make sure there's realistic hope about what can be done. Acting to protect ourselves in the face of climate disruption can lead to benefits. Also important to not over-exaggerate those benefits, though, as well. As I said earlier, building from extreme weather events to action There has been quite a lot of movement on this and movement in the polls over the past year and a half. But again, making sure that you start to fill in the efficacy gap, which a lot of people feel in the wake of events such as Sandy. Always important to tap values when engaging the public, and particularly when getting into climate impacts and adaptation, which can be quite emotional, to really make sure that we're focusing on the idea of safe, prosperous communities that will benefit from preventative action, that prevention does pay, that we do have a long trend in the U.S. around the idea of being prepared, back to Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. So really saying, why wait? Even if there isn't 100% certainty, why wait and take the risk? On the other hand, we know that there's more scientific certainty on climate change than most issues we address from a public policy standpoint. So you also have to be prepared to hold that space as well and balance that. The idea of readiness, as I just said, important, people's health and well-being, critical, starting to feel the pinch on that in light of some of these changes in weather trends. And while I try and avoid saying we're looking for a clean energy future, we have to make the solutions here. You can tap concern about the type of world that we are leaving for future generations. A couple of cautionary notes. Urgency can be tricky when talking about climate adaptation. Around storms is one thing, but when some of the trends look really bad at about 30 years, much harder to think about how to build into a conversation like that. So it's really a point of creating an engagement ladder that starts where people are at and moves into some of those more intense, deeper issues. I think it's also really important when we talk about adaptation to emphasize collective action or approaches on a regional level, so we don't have one community or one homeowner pitted against another. That really, the best way to solve these challenges are by working together. And finally, it's important to set milestones for success, because this is an extremely long-term issue that we're just starting to engage the public on. So we need to make sure we're not approaching it as though we're going to solve the problem entirely, but rather work towards key goals that show progress on the ground. So thanks again for the opportunity to be with all of you, and look forward to further conversation. Thanks.
Thank you, Kara. Through the subsequent presentations that we'll hear today, we'll see how some of the principles and strategies that Kara has mentioned will be applied, can be applied, and how you may be able to use them in your own communities. So next up, we have a quick poll question for folks. Which groups appear to be natural allies in your state or community for moving forward on climate change adaptation? So if you could please select all of these groups that you think apply in your situation. And we'll give folks just a minute to submit their answers. Okay, if you want to pull up the results. So it looks like groups such as individual community members rank among the top as groups engaged in natural allies for adaptation. Also, educational institutions, actually 81%, and then elected officials and churches, and the business community, not at the top, but 55% is still pretty good. So thank you for your responses there.